Chapter 20. Tigers Take No Nonsense. Tiger country it was. That became clear during the day's voyage. Roger was up ahead in the skiff. Suddenly he signalled his two men to stop rowing. He pointed to a cove. Hal stopped his oarsmen and the Ark drifted up alongside the skiff. On the log, projecting out over the cove, was a large jaguar. Its great head was turned the other way and it did not see the silent boats. It was busy fishing. It was using its tail as bait, or, rather, as a lure. It would tap the surface of the water lightly with its tail. Insects or fruit dropping on the surface would make a similar sound. The fish would come up to investigate. Suddenly, the tiger made a quick thrust into the water with its paw and came up with a fish in its claws. He popped it into his mouth and ate it with relish. He looked lazily about and saw the boats. He got up slowly, too dignified to run, and walked solemnly into the forest. Aqua was grinning. "Very smart tiger," he said proudly, as if he owned it. Roger was not willing to believe what he had seen. "Do you think he was really using his tail to attract the fish? What does your book say, Professor?" Hal was, as usual, deep in a manual. "Well, here's something pretty wonderful. And it's by a naturalist you can trust, Wallace. Listen to this. The jaguar, say the Indians, is the most cunning animal in the forest. He can imitate the voice of almost every bird and animal so exactly as to draw them towards him. He fishes in the rivers, lashing the water with his tail to imitate falling fruit, and, when the fish approach, hooks them up with his claws. He catches and eats turtles, and I have myself found unbroken shells which he has completely cleaned out with his paws. He even attacks the cowfish in its own element, and an eyewitness assured me that he had watched one dragging one out of the water, this bulky animal weighing as much as a large ox."
"Wow," commented Roger.
"You think you're going to catch anything as strong and as smart as that? You're crazy." Banquo became interested. "Does the senor wish to catch a tigre?"
"That's what I'm aiming to do," said Hal.
He hoped that Banquo, who had been a pretty sour customer during the trip so far, was now going to offer to help him. It was a vain hope.
"You cannot capture a tigre," said Banquo.
"Why not?"
"It needs 20 or 30 men. We are only 7 men and a boy."
"But the tiger man kills a tiger single-handedly."
"He kills it. He doesn't take it alive. That's different."
Hal had to admit the truth of this, but he was all the more determined to take home a tiger. He cut short the day's journey at noon and ordered a landing. After eating, the men were set at work, building a cage. When Banquo objected, Hal said, "Banquo, we're going to stay right here until we get a tiger, no matter if it takes a month." To make the cage not only strong but light, stout bamboos were lashed together with green, wiry lianas. A door was built at one end. The cage was kept small enough so that the animal could not get leverage to break it. It was about 4 feet wide, 4 feet deep, and 10 feet long. Nearby, Hal found a trail to the shore where animals were accustomed to come down to drink. He looked eagerly for tiger tracks, but had to call Aqua. The Indian found them, and they were big enough to satisfy the most ambitious collector. Hal and his men began to dig a pit. The Indians were willing to work, but Banquo sat on the sidelines muttering to himself. The pit was made 6 feet deep and about as wide. It was squarely in the middle of the trail. Then the men, under Hal's direction, cut some poles and laid them across the hole. Hal laid the heavy loop of a lasso on the poles. Then he climbed the great fig tree that overhung the pit and tied the other end of the lasso to a branch, making the rope between the branch and the loop fairly taut. Then the poles and the loop were covered with leaves and dirt so that the pit was no longer visible. The cage was brought up and placed nearby, but out of sight among the bushes. The idea was that the tiger should fall through the loop, which would tighten around him as he dropped into the pit. Then he would be drawn out and dragged into the cage. Banquo snorted sarcastically. "This you cannot do," he said. They retired to camp and waited. It was just getting dark when Hal heard a commotion in the direction of the trail. He stole through the woods to the pit. But he was due for disappointment. The pit was occupied, but not by a tiger. The great blunderbuss of the woods, the tapir, had fallen into it. Hal already had a tapir and did not want to take on another. Space in the boat was too precious. It was a two-hour job to haul out that heavy beast, cut it free, repair the pit, cover it, and reset the lasso. Then back to camp for another wait, but Hal was less hopeful than before. "Aqua," he said, "we don't want all animals in the jungle falling into that pit. We want a tiger." "Then let us call one," said Aqua. He went to his pack of belongings and brought out a steer's horn. Hal followed him to the trail at the point where it came out on the river bank. Aqua put his lips to the horn, and a sound that certainly did not sound like Aqua's voice came from it. It was exactly the voice of a tiger, beginning with a few deep coughs, rising to a fiendish roar, dying down to low, slow grunts. It was so that moose were called in the North Woods. How different to call. They listened. The small animals of the forest had been paralysed into silence by the roar, but there was no answering tiger call. "Guess we're in for a night of it," Hal said. All night, at intervals, Aqua made his call. It was not until just before dawn that there was a distant coughing answer. A faint grey was lightening the black river, but the darkness inside the jungle was still complete. Aqua called again. Again the answer. Each time it was closer. Now they could hear the low grunts at the end of the call. That meant that the animal was not more than a mile away. Closer and closer it came, until it seemed that the beast must be just beside them in the bushes. Then a roar was cut off in the middle, and when it came again, it had a new note. It was not the voice of one coming to meet a friend, but of one who had been tricked and trapped by an enemy. There was so much savage rage in it that the icicles prickled up and down Hal's back. "He's in the pit," he said. They ran to the pit, where they were joined by the others from the camp. The pit was like a huge pot, furiously boiling, with something that showed yellow and black in the dawn. Everyone shouted with joy except Banquo, and even he seemed sourly impressed. The rope hung straight and taut from the tree, and the branch to which it was fastened was shaking violently. Evidently, the tiger was well caught in the noose. Now the little matter of getting him into the cage. Hal looked at the wildly churning mass of muscle with dismay, and the ear-splitting roars of the beast unsteadied his nerves. This whirling demon was certainly in no mood to walk into a cage. Hal had the cage brought up to the edge of the pit, and the door opened. He climbed the tree and untied the end of the line. He came down, past the rope and through the door, and passed out the back between the slats. Now if everybody would pull, the tiger might be drawn up out of the pit and into the cage. It was an excellent theory. Tigers had been caught that way, but he reckoned without Banquo. That gentleman, instead of pulling with the rest, sat under the tree and made sneering remarks. The tiger, furiously trying to climb out of the pit, was helped by the men pulling it on the rope. Now he was up to the door of the cage. He could not see the men back in the bushes, but Banquo was plainly visible. The big cat's eyes blazed, and with a terrific roar he lunged at Banquo. The rope scorched through the men's hands and was pulled free. Banquo let out the most piercing yell of his life and scrambled up the tree. If he had had time to think, he might have acted differently. It was the worst thing he could do. The Jaguar, expert tree climber, came up after him.
"Shoot him! Shoot him!" screamed Banquo.
Hal's Savage was in his hand, but he did not raise it. Higher and higher went Banquo. Perhaps, he thought, if he got into branches that were weak enough, the heavy Jaguar would not follow. This might have worked if he had not run into a wasp's nest. An angry buzzing stopped him. His fingers had broken the nest, and the residents came out 100 strong to see who their visitor was. The welkin rang with his cries of distress as he was stung in dozens of places at once, on face, hands, legs, and through his thin shirt. The tiger was coming on, sinking his claws deep into the bark and moving with the terrific grace and beauty of a great snake. Not that Banquo saw any grace and beauty in it. He looked down into two eyes like headlights and open jaws lined with sharp teeth. The tiger was no longer tearing the sky apart with his roar. He was growling softly and deeply as if enjoying the prospect of such an easy meal. Hal was ashamed of himself for viewing the spectacle with so much satisfaction, but he could not idly leave Banquo to the wasps and the tiger. He caught the end of the rope and lashed it around a branch so that the animal could not go any higher. Banquo did not know that this had been done and expected to be seized and devoured at any instant. Hal was content to let him live in a terror for a moment longer. Perhaps it would be good for him. Banquo thrashed furiously at the wasps, only exciting them to more stinging. Slapping and striking, he lost his grip and slipped down towards the waiting jaws. He caught himself just in time. Hal's heart popped into his mouth. Perhaps he was carrying this game just a little too far. He called the men, loosened the rope, and they all laid to and began to draw the beast down the tree. The cage was brought to the foot of the tree, and the rope was once more passed in through the door and out the back.
"All together!" cried Hal. "Pull!"
They pulled with a will, and the rope broke. Instantly, Hal was shinning up the tree. He had dropped his rifle, and his revolver was in its holster. He knew what he had to do. Kill the tiger before it killed Banquo. Banquo was screaming hysterically. The tiger was inching steadily upwards. They were so close together that Hal had not dared to fire from the ground for fear of hitting the man instead of the beast. The tiger, with a savage growl, made a lunge at one of Banquo's feet, missing it by inches. Banquo pulled it out of reach, retreated further into the wasp's nest, and shrieked to high heaven. The tiger was making ready for another lunge when Hal brought the butt of his revolver cracking down on one of the animal's hind feet. It had the desired effect. The beast forgot Banquo and turned to face his new tormentor. His head was now out of line with the cringing form above, and Hal fired. He didn't wait to see if the bullet had found its mark. The ear-splitting roar told him that it had. He slid down the tree so fast that he ruined a pair of shorts. He was certain the tiger would follow, and it did. He had no sooner reached the ground than the tiger leapt from a branch 15 feet up and came whizzing down to land on the spot where his enemy had just been, but Hal made a quick jump to one side. He fired again. He missed. His hand shook. The revolver wobbled. He fired again and again. He realised now that Roger was firing with the savage. The tiger rolled over, got up, wheezed blood, bellowed hoarsely, and came on again. Hal felt sick and numb. Everything was a blur. The tiger, the men, the woods, all whirling madly. He tried to get hold of himself. He fired straight into open jaws that were spewing blood over him. Then he was conscious that someone else was in the fight. Aqua was there with his spear. It was the famous old Indian way of fighting, the way that had been adopted also by the tiger man. But the spear had two blades instead of one. It was something like a two-pronged fork. The tiger was already shot through and through, yet he charged again with a coughing roar that filled the air with red spray. No one could have stopped that express train. Aqua did not try to stop it with his own strength. He let the earth beneath him do the work. As the weapon pierced the tiger's chest, Aqua pressed the other end of the spear into the earth, thus letting it take the force of the blow. The tiger was stopped dead in his tracks. Aqua lunged forward with the spear, trying to push the animal over onto its back, but the tiger swerved, shook itself loose from the spear, and came on again with a roar, making a leap at Aqua's throat. Hal and Roger kept firing. The king of the jungle was being steadily shredded to bits, but he fought on. Again Aqua plunged the spear into his chest and the other end into the ground. The spear bent like a bow, but it stopped the charge. The tiger staggered weakly. While it was off balance, Aqua heaved with all his might. Over went the animal onto its back, but all its four paws were towards Aqua, clawing the air. The Indian sidestepped to one behind the beast's head, still pinning the body firmly to the ground. Once behind the head, he could work more safely. He was out of reach of the powerful legs, which shot out in all directions as the animal furiously tried to wrench loose. Aqua seesawed the spear back and forth, pressing it further and further, and piercing the heart. Hal emptied the rest of his revolver into the great head. There was a wild struggle that tore up that earth and brush for yards around, but the roars were becoming weaker. The big feet swiped the air with less force. The powerful beast went limp and lay still, blood flowing from the heart. The two boys and Aqua had no sense of victory. This was a battle they had lost, not won. They still had to take a tiger alive.